Welcome to a news experience designed to empower you to think critically and form your own opinions. In this episode, I present the latest top stories by weaving together coverage from a variety of news outlets, offering you a balanced view of the facts and perspectives. My goal is simple: inspire you to be your own judge in the complex world of news without any sensationalism or antics. By hearing different angles, you'll have the tools to make thoughtful and balanced decisions about the stories that matter most. If you find value in this approach, please like, share, and subscribe to stay up to date with my future episodes. Let's navigate the news together. All right, let's start by diving into part one that includes a political firestorm burning through Washington concerning Kilmer Garcia. Senator Chris Van Hollen's catching flack from Republicans for flying to El Salvador last week to meet a quote-unquote Maryland man locked in a notorious mega prison. Fox News says the Democrats' visit to Kilmer Abrego Garcia, deported despite a court order, has GOP lawmakers and Trump allies fuming, accusing him of siding with an alleged gang member over American victims. It's a saga that's been simmering for weeks, packed with legal battles, raw emotion, and high stakes, and both sides are digging in deep. This all kicked off on March 15th, when Kilmer Abrego Garcia, a 29-year-old father of three from Maryland, was shipped to El Salvador's Terrorism Confinement Center, CCOT, despite a 2019 immigration judge's order barring his removal. Garcia fled gang threats from Barrio 18 over a decade ago, securing legal withholding of removal to stay in the U.S. with yearly check-ins. But the Trump administration, using the 1798 Alien Enemies Act to target suspected gang members, swept him up with over 200 others, mostly Venezuelans, and sent him to CCOT, a prison slammed for harsh conditions. The Justice Department called it an administrative error in court, admitting Garcia shouldn't have gone, but then claimed he's an MS-13 gang member, a charge his lawyers and family reject. No criminal records back this up, only an MS-13 gang tattoo on his hand. The feds cited a confidential witness in Garcia's clothes, a Chicago Bulls hat and hoodie, at arrest. U.S. District Judge Paula Zenas ripped the administration for doing nothing to retrieve him, despite her order and a Supreme Court nudge on April 7th to facilitate his return. Van Hollen jumped in early, meeting Garcia's wife, Jennifer Vasquez Sura, promising, "We won't rest until he's home," and accusing the administration of lying about Garcia's status. With no progress by April 16th, he flew to El Salvador to check on Garcia and push for his release. Salvadoran soldiers blocked him 3 kilometers from CCOT, and Vice President Felix Ulloa stonewalled requests for any contact. Van Hollen went public, holding 2 press conferences with local media to pressure authorities. The move worked. On April 17th, Van Hollen met Garcia for an hour at a San Salvador hotel. Not CCOT. Garcia, sporting a Kansas City Chiefs cap, sent a message of love to his family, who hadn't heard from him since March 15th. But Salvadoran President Nayib Bukele spun it, releasing photos and claiming Garcia was sipping margaritas in a tropical paradise, mocking Van Hollen's concerns about CCOT's conditions. Van Hollen called it a big fat lie, staged with salt-rimmed glasses neither touched, and said Garcia was traumatized, later moved to Santa Ana Detention Center with no outside contact. Republicans seized the moment. At a White House briefing, Patty Morin, whose daughter Rachel was killed by an illegal immigrant in 23, blasted Van Hollen for using taxpayer money to visit Garcia while barely addressing her family's loss. She called it a betrayal, asking why Garcia's rights trumped her daughter's life. Trump piled on, labeling Van Hollen a grandstander and fool for begging in El Salvador, insisting Garcia's a foreign terrorist with a bad record, though no court evidence supports this, just his MS-13 gang tattoo. Border Czar Tom Homan was blunt. He's home in El Salvador, where he belongs. Democrats see a broader fight. At Dulles Airport, Van Hollen stood with Garcia's tearful family, calling the deportation an illegal abduction and a constitutional violation. He argued that denying one man's rights threatens everyone's, noting Garcia's lack of a criminal record. Other Democrats, like Senator Cory Booker, are mulling El Salvador trips, signaling this isn't over. Jennifer Garcia's U.S. citizen wife called the meeting a sign, "God is listening," but fears for his safety. The legal battle's escalating. A Fourth Circuit ruling on April 17th rejected Trump's bid to Judge Zenas' order, slamming their inaction. El Salvador's holding firm, with Bukele showing no give, while Trump's team vows to deport Garcia again if he returns. Republicans like Senator John Cornyn call Van Hollen's push divorced from reality, while Democrats frame it as justice. It's a raw divide, due process versus tough on crime, and it's only getting hotter. Let's finish with part two that encompasses the legal showdown that's got the Supreme Court in the hot seat. Justice Samuel Alito's tearing into his colleagues for what he calls an unprecedented and legally questionable move to halt President Trump's deportation of Venezuelan migrants. Fox News says Alito, joined by Justice Clarence Thomas, penned a blistering dissent against the court's late-night order on April 19th, which stopped the removal of Venezuelans from a Texas detention center under the 1798 Alien Enemies Act. Alito's gripe? The majority called literally in the middle of the night without letting lower courts weigh in. And he's not mincing words. This clash's been brewing for weeks, pitting Trump's immigration push against judicial checks, and both sides are holding firm. The saga kicked off on March 15th when Trump dusted off the Alien Enemies Act, a 1798 law used only three times in U.S. history, last during World War II, to fast-track deportation of alleged Trinidad-Aragua gang members, labeling the Venezuelan gang a terrorist group tied to Nicolas Maduro's regime. The administration deported over 200 people, mostly to El Salvador's CECOP megaprison. The act allows the president to deport citizens of an enemy nation without hearings during war or invasion. Trump argued Venezuela's chaos qualifies. Critics, including the ACLU, called it a stretch, saying it bypasses due process and risks targeting innocents. The case of Kilmer Abrego Garcia, a Maryland dad mistakenly deported despite a 2019 court order, blew up when his wife and Senator Chris Van Hollen raised alarms. By late March, U.S. District Judge James Boasberg in D.C. intervened, ordering planes carrying deportees to turn back, branding the moves lawless. Trump's team defied him, prompting Boasberg to find probable cause for criminal contempt, a rare jab. The administration appealed, arguing Boasberg's nationwide block overstepped. They claimed Garcia was an MS-13 member, though no evidence materialized. On April 7th, the Supreme Court stepped in, ruling 5-4 that Boasberg's orders was filed in the wrong court, D.C. instead of Texas, where detainees were held. The court, in an unsigned opinion, allowed deportations to proceed, but required notice and a reasonable time for detainees to challenge via habeas corpus petitions in their detention district. Justice Brett Kavanaugh's concurrence, joined by liberals and Justice Amy Coney Barrett, emphasized this due process mandate. That seemed to tilt toward Trump, but it set up a second round. By April 18th, the ACLU learned the administration was prepping to deport more Venezuelans from the Bluebonnet Detention Center in Anson, Texas, 24 miles north of Abilene. Families reported buses arriving and English-only notices handed out, declaring immediate deportation under the act. Unclear contestation rights. The ACLU rushed to U.S. District Judge James Hendricks in Texas for an emergency block, but he declined, needing more time. They tried Boasberg again, who admitted he lacked jurisdiction since the detainees were in Texas. "I'm sympathetic, but I can't act," he told ACLU lawyer Lee Gelnert. With time running out, the ACLU filed an emergency appeal with the Supreme Court around 5 p.m. on April 18th, landing it with Justice Alito, who oversees the Fifth Circuit. What happened next was jaw-dropping. Just 8 hours later, around 1 a.m. on April 19th, a 7-justice majority issued a brief, unsigned order directing the government not to remove any member of the putative class of detainees from the United States until further order of this court. The speed was so fast Alito couldn't file his dissent in time. He promised one to follow. Justices Alito and Thomas dissented, signaling frustration with the majority haste. Alito's 5-page dissent, released late on March April 19th, pulled no punches. He blasted the court for acting hastily and prematurely, without hearing the government's side or letting lower courts build a record. Literally in the middle of the night, the court issued unprecedented and legally questionable relief, he wrote, arguing there was dubious factual support for the ACLU's claim of imminent deportations. He cited a Justice Department lawyer's statement in a separate case, denying plans to deport anyone that weekend. Alito insisted the court lacked jurisdiction at this stage and should have followed established procedures, letting the Fifth Circuit or Texas rules Texas courts rule first. Both the executive and judiciary have an obligation to follow the law, he stressed, joined by Thomas. The administration hit back hard. Solicitor General D. John Sauer urged the court to dissolve the stay, calling the ACLU's request fatally premature and overboard. The government promised not to deport habeas filers under the act, but asked to use other immigration laws for removals, a fallback to keep things moving. Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt called the lawsuits meritless, accusing radical activists of prioritizing terrorist aliens over Americans. Democrats see a deeper issue. Representative Veronica Escobar labeled the administration's defiance a constitutional crisis, pointing to their ignoring Boasberg's earlier order. The ACLU's Gohlert hailed the court's block, saying, "These men faced a horrific prison without a court chance." But GOP figures like Senator John Cornyn backed Alito, arguing the court's rush undermines judicial process. The core question whether the act applies to gang members outside wartime remains open, with more legal fightings looming. What's next? The court's pause keeps Venezuelans at Blue Bonnets safe for now, but it's temporary. The justices want clarity. Lower courts are racing to hear habeas claims, and the Fifth Circuit's still in play. Alito's dissent has lit a fuse. Will it sway the court or just fuel the fire? I appreciate your time, and I know it's valuable. Thanks for spending some of it with me today. Please let folks know that we're here so we can reach a wider audience. And as always, stay informed and stay balanced.